For too long, the United States has turned a blind eye to the atrocities being committed against civilians in Yemen by the Saudi-U.S. coalition. Just last month, the Saudi-led coalition dropped a U.S.-made bomb in a devastating attack on a school bus that killed 40 children. Just the latest in a long string of horrors in this genocidal war that has killed tens of thousands of Yemeni civilians with bombs and mass starvation, creating the worst humanitarian crisis in the world. Yet today in Yemen, our military continues to wage this interventionist war alongside Saudi Arabia, unauthorized by Congress. The time for crocodile tears and baseless platitudes is over. Enough is enough. The U.S. must end its support for Saudi Arabia and stop waging interventionist wars that increase destruction, death, and suffering around the world, drain our resources here at home, and threaten our own national security.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Now, regardless of your opinion of Tulsi Gabbard, I myself have entertained the possibility in the past that she was simply positioning herself to be the next anti-establishment candidate for 2020. But I have to admit that things that she has said in the past have been quite profound. She was one of the earlier people to point out the fact, if not the first, that there is no such thing as moderate rebels in Syria. Now, she's coming out recently addressing Congress and simply pointing out the things that we've known for a very long time about what's going on the ground in Yemen and the U.S.'s involvement in that. Speaking directly and calling out members of Congress, saying no more crocodile tears, no more platitudes, which the point to take away here is that this has been going on for a long time, and that regardless of people doing this, this is not the first time we've seen statements like this. Regardless of this, they'll likely continue on just like they have before if we don't make a big enough stink about it. Just like we saw Rand Paul before address very similar things in regard to Syria or just U.S. interventionism around the world, which is she's also making that point about. But the reality here, the takeaway, is that we are making a difference, as I try to tell you guys on a regular basis, that what we're doing here is forcing this to be addressed. Because, understand it, they do not want people talking about Yemen, as they've made painfully clear. Look at, where's the media in regard to the even the second bombing of 22 children, which I'll be touching on in a moment, after they were forced, grudgingly, drug into the light to discuss the 40 children that were killed in a bus by a U.S. bomb. They didn't talk about it because they don't want to talk about it, but it's being forced into the light. And it's important to understand this, and we should support people like Gabbard for saying statements like that, regardless of what you may think of her, and continue to push this into the light, as well as many of the other things we're going to talk about today, the things that they don't want you looking at, as they continue to try to distract you with other stories that are relatively inconsequential in regard to the larger play in front of us. So moving on to the first story, and this is the important story, I feel, of the day that really draws this into attention. And this will not be touched on by most mainstream media, I can almost guarantee it. Coming from MiddleEastMonitor.com, entitled Saudi Arabia Admits Killing Civilians in Yemen, comma, again. For the second time. Very important story here. And now this is, as far as I can tell, the only outlet that I've seen this reporting on. I'm sure people will pick this up as it continues to develop, but Saudi Arabia has yet again admitted to this now. Of course, coming from pressure from people like us and the United States through that to them, saying, yeah, do something because we're getting drugged through the mud. But does that mean they really care about this? Does that mean anything's actually going to change? Those are the questions we should be asking. So, as you guys know, last Saturday, the Saudis admitted executing a raid on August 9th, killing about 51 people, maybe more, including 40 children in northern Yemen. Of course, we saw Jim Carrey's cartoon, which drug that into the limelight, which is good. It should be. But it shouldn't take something like that to draw attention to 40 children being killed in a school bus by a U.S. bomb. This was in Sada'a, And they claim it was simply a mistake, but failing to say that killing children was not the intent, only that they realized that the Houthi rebels were not involved. Had they been, it would have been a normal military operation, as they tried to claim in the beginning. And now, Saudi Arabia yesterday admitted killing civilians in Yemen for the second time this month, according to the Saudi press agency. The killings were made in an attack on August 23rd in a vehicle in southern Hodeidah, killing at least 22 children. Remember, this is the story that we reported on in the last American Vagabond, one that we broke due to the on-the-ground reporting of Hussein al-Bukhaidi. The very person who broke the story about the MK2 Lockheed Martin-made bomb that killed the previous 40 children. And this was also not covered by the mainstream media at all. Now, the ongoing conflict in Yemen escalated in 2015 when Saudi Arabia and its Sunni Arab allies, including the United Arab Emirates, launched a massive air campaign aimed at rolling back Houthi gains. The group had taken control of the capital, Sana'a, and large swaths of the country, forcing the U.S.-backed and forcibly installed government into exile, which is currently the government the U.S. pretends is internationally recognized and trying to force it back in, which is a large aspect of what we're seeing take place here. That and, of course, controlling the port of Hodeidah. Saudi Arabia's assessment over controversial airstrikes in Yemen only now comes following warnings made by the United States that it could reduce military and intelligence support. Again, recognizing they're giving them military and intelligence support, even on the 40 children killed, if the Saudis fail to demonstrate an attempt at lowering civilian casualties. Of course, not just stopping killing children, but just tone it down a little bit so the media stops paying attention. U.S. concerns were raised only when a catastrophic strike on a school bus killed 40 children last month, and it was forced into the discussion by the independent media. But realize that this is only one such horrific event in a long, blood-soaked, U.S.-backed effort in Yemen, an illegal effort. We now know that the bomb used in the attack was built by Lockheed Martin and sold to the Saudis as part of a U.S. State Department-sanctioned arms deal that is only set to increase dramatically over the next decade. Regardless of all of this, continue to increase your tax dollars. And late last month, the expert UN panel said airstrikes by the Saudi-led U.S.-backed coalition in the war in Yemen have caused heavy civilian casualties and some may amount to war crimes, which we reported on then, to which the Saudi Arabia recoiled in disgust. How dare you say that we could possibly commit war crimes? But now we see this very clearly coming into light, that they're admitting to it. UN-mediated Yemen peace talks have currently hung in the balance as the government delegation warned that it would leave today if representatives of the Houthi group do not show up. However, yesterday, Mohammed Abdul Salman, chief of the Houthi delegation to Geneva, said on messaging service Telegram that, quote, the U.S.-backed Saudi coalition is placing obstacles to prevent the national delegation from participating in Geneva consultations. Understanding that this is an effort that we reported on recently. Saudi prevents Houthis from attending Geneva talks, stopping them from reaching them as they're screaming out about how dare they not show up to these talks as they're trying to subvert their efforts from the very beginning. The point here is understanding that this whole thing is about manipulating your perception and pretending that they don't dare show up because they're the terrorists here while they're actively keeping them from showing up. And these Houthi rebels added, these obstacles come after the coalition tried to push us toward refusing to participate in these peace talks through military escalation on the ground, threatening them essentially to say, you dare not show up or we'll continue to bomb your children. Goes on to say, quote, our permanent choice, the Houthi rebels say this, quote, our permanent choice is peace under a unified and sovereign Yemen. Very terrorist type talk, I would imagine how Saudi Arabia sees it. The legitimate grouping of the Houthis and the Yemeni people on the ground saying they simply want peace under a sovereign Yemen, under the legitimate government, not the U.S. forced government. And we can see that they're actively keeping them from these peace talks. Very interesting. So the point always to take away here is that the Saudi Arabia is being forced grudgingly to admit to things that they know they've done, As we pointed out, the JIAT group has actively ignored many number of things that international groups have pointed out they're ignoring. Many different funeral bombings and infrastructure of civilians they've bombed from the beginning of this invasion. And now pretending to care about any number of a couple events that were forced into the light because of the independent media. And now actively keeping the Houthis from even participating in the talks. They are trying to control your perception about what's actually going on. Don't let them. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com. Another very important story, as all of these are. This one in regard to Syria, something we've been keeping up on from the very beginning, entitled Trump Does 180 Shift on Syria. Regime change back on the table. Interesting how quickly this dynamic goes back and forth. The reality we need to understand is this has been the plan from the very beginning. And the rhetoric around it, as always, is meant to control your perception of a story that they're trying to tone down the reality of, which is increasingly showing us the sinister, I guess, nature of U.S. foreign policy in regard to Syria and just about everywhere else they're involved. So according to reports, President Trump has expressed a desire for a complete 180 policy shift on Syria. Only months ago, the president expressed a desire to, quote, get out and pull the over 2,000 publicly acknowledged, I imagine there's many more than that, American military personnel from the country. But now, the new report finds Trump has approved, quote, an indefinite military and diplomatic effort in Syria. Nothing shocking here. This has been the same thing they've been doing. They've never stopped doing this. Their words have changed. Of course, now this coming back as they seemingly are being pushed out. Interesting how that always seems to be the case. This new policy, new in quotations, because it's not a new policy, that counters Trump's prior stance against the military pursuing Syrian regime change, both on the campaign trail, mind you, and during his first year in the White House, reportedly involves, quote, a new strategy for an indefinitely extended military, diplomatic, and economic effort there, according to senior State Department officials. Now, obviously, a lot of this comes from mainstream reports, so take it with a grain of salt. But the reality here is that regardless of any statements being made today, this is very clearly, verifiably so, in fact, what they've been trying to accomplish from the very beginning. Whatever claim they throw out about civilians and Assad and ISIS, all of it is designed to control Syria, be that pipelines, be that Greater Israel Project, be that U.S. hegemony around the world. This is very clearly, documentably so, by their own information, what they've been trying to accomplish for decades. Now, this even though one of the Pentagon's main justifications for being on Syrian soil in the first place, which would be the destruction of ISIS, has already essentially been taken care of, at least even by their own statements. Now, the terror group essentially holds no significant territory and in a lot of ways has been driven completely underground or, you know, protected by the U.S. areas, which they seem to snugly hide in, with nothing ever happening to them. Either way, the reality of them being taken out of Syria is generally an accomplished goal. And that's why we're now seeing them pivot into something else. Of course, always seems to be Iran now. That seems to be the focus, as revealingly, the report describes that, quote, the administration has redefined its goals to include, of course, the exit of all Iranian military and proxy forces from Syria, and establishment of a stable, non-threatening government acceptable, of course, to all Syrians and international community, disregarding the fact that currently the government of Assad is roundly accepted by the Syrian people and the international community. They're just continuing to force their narrative as the main narrative, as if that makes it true. Now, of course, there's a glaringly obvious issue of the fact that the most powerful, top competing alternatives, as they put it, to the current government of Damascus includes, of course, groups like Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which we've talked about, al-Qaeda, al-Nusra, which currently holds Idlib and is under direct allegiance to al-Qaeda. As I don't need to share the video yet again of the State Department's own words, clarifying that that is the strongest al-Qaeda stronghold since 9/11. The largest al-Qaeda stronghold since 9/11. Repeatedly so, we've shown this. And this is the alternative they want in place of the democratically elected sovereign government of Syria, just like we talk about in other places where they force this narrative, this contradicting narrative, like the MEK for Iran, of who's better for them, even though they're the extremists they pretend to fight. Again, of course, this is yet another very clear step in the direction of outrightly standing with the very extremists that they've pretended to fight from the very beginning. And of course, don't forget about the chemical weapons scare, because they will not fail to continue to push that back into your face every day, regardless of nothing new actually taking place. Which takes us right into the next story, coming from MiddleEastEye.com. Actually posted as an actual representation of there's some kind of chemical weapons development happening, even though we've shown that this is not actually the case. Nonetheless, this article is important to touch on for a few reasons. This one entitled, Chemical Weapons Are Being Prepared for Idlib Assault, says U.S. Envoy to Syria. Take note of the ridiculous picture below, of a man with a bag and a cup over his head, with some pinholes in it, as if that would actually stop any kind of chemical weapon. This is yet another propaganda effort. Now, the important part are what the U.S. envoy actually had to say. The new U.S. representative for Syria, his name is Jim Jeffrey, said on Thursday, warning that if any attack on the last big rebel enclave would be a reckless escalation, again, every day, coming back and saying, by the way, if anybody attacks in Syria with chemical weapons, we're going to do something with no change, they continue to force this back into your mind. He says that there is, quote, lots of evidence of chemical weapons are being prepared by the Syrian government forces in Idlib in the region in southwest Syria. Lots of evidence. Oh, evidence. I'd like to see that evidence just for once from these people. Jim was appointed on August 17th as Secretary of State Mike Pompeo's special advisor on Syria, overseeing talks on a political transition in that country. And here's the best part. He goes on to say, I'm very sure that we have very, very good grounds to be making these warnings. That sounds to me like someone who's being told by people like Pompeo that they have lots of evidence. And he's simply saying, I'm very, very sure that we have very good grounds to be making these warnings because people I believe told me this. Of course, these are people that we should be trusting because they've never lied to us once ever in our past, even recent. Goes on to say, quote, any offensive is to be to us is objectable as a reckless escalation. Any offensive, of course, he's saying. There is lots of evidence that chemical weapons are being prepared. Yet again, just saying lots of evidence. Never yet once preparing or presenting any kind of actual evidence. But guess who has? Syria and Russia have presented actual evidence to the contrary, that the U.S.-backed rebels are preparing exactly that. But no one likes to talk about that. Of course, Washington has issued a strong warning to Syria's government against using chemical weapons in the widely expected offensive. Again, every day, as I pointed out, with no real change, just in case you forgot, if there's chemical weapons used, we're going to do something, continuing to keep this in your mind. Now, this is a great image shared and the commentary by Syrian Analysis, by Kavorkas Almasian, which is his name, that runs Syrian Analysis. Just when you thought you've seen it all, Al Jazeera claims that Idlib is preparing for a chemical attack with these primitive tools. Again, showing you the bag and the cup. Really, really genuinely ridiculous. But the point is, just like we saw the white helmets helping people supposedly attack with sarin with no masks, no gloves, directly after the attack, because these people on the ground are making these things happen, right? And there's no actual evidence to back it up. And they're running with this because it suits their narrative. Likely because these people on the ground using bags and cups don't know any better. They just know that they're supposed to pretend like something is happening. Always make sure you tune into Syriana Analysis because he does an excellent job of talking about this stuff. But the overarching point here is that this man is telling you we have lots of very good evidence that I'm told. So trust us, because we know they have evidence of something on the ground. Until we see evidence of that, knowing all of the past multiple accounts of these that they pushed forward that have been debunked, that at the time they claimed they had evidence, and now we already know that Mattis has admitted that they did not have evidence, knowing that they lied to us, why in the world would anybody trust them now? Especially a lackey like this, simply reporting that he's been told that we have lots of evidence. Really understand that. And I'm not going to report on it today, but as I hear, it seems like Mattis might be being pushed out from the Trump administration. Maybe that's why. Because he seems to be the only glaring, partial insight on some kind of actual information in regard to this, that's saying maybe we shouldn't be invading Iran. Maybe we shouldn't be attacking Syria for no reason. But we'll see how that develops. I don't know. In my opinion, anybody involved in this administration is highly, highly suspect, especially a lackey like this. Moving on to the next story coming from mintpressnews.com and in regard to Nikki Haley and South America. Another update on the Security Council meetings in regard to what they're trying to accomplish seemingly all over the world by spreading lies and misinformation. This one entitled, Nikki Haley, U.S. will not remain a passive observer as Nicaragua becomes another Venezuela or Syria. Interesting, two countries that they're actively manipulating, and that's why they're dealing with what they are today. And as if for some stretch of the imagination, the U.S. is even currently a passive observer in Nicaragua is patently false, verifiably false. And these people are lying to you at every stretch of the... And of course, as always, do your own research with the links in the show notes below. Don't just take my word for it. Do your research and come to your own conclusions, and likely you will see the very same thing that I'm saying. So the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, which you're all very familiar with, warned at the U.N. Security Council on Wednesday that Nicaragua is heading down the path that led to conflict in Syria and an economic collapse in Venezuela. Of course, it wasn't the illegal invasion or the economic sanctions or the actual bombing and invasion of the country and all the many other horrible things that the United States and their backers of Israel and Saudi Arabia have done in these countries. No, it's none of that. It's these countries' choices that have led to their collapse. Even though we've shown, especially in Venezuela, these economic sanctions have an immediate effect on their economy, but no, it's these countries and their terrible choices, which could play a factor. But the fact that they're continuing to lie about their involvement shows you the reality of the situation. And we've already reported in Nicaragua that they are actively carrying out or trying to carry out a coup to which they fought off. Any of these countries that stand against the U.S. empire and their goals around the world are cast as, you know, the problems around the world, even though there's many horribly, horribly authoritarian dictator countries right now in South America that are praised by Nikki Haley because guess what? They bend the knee and work along with the United States. But that's not what you're seeing in Syria, Venezuela, or Nicaragua. They like to be sovereign and do their own thing. And that doesn't necessarily mean bad things, despite all of the rhetoric you hear from the United States and everyone else that's backing them in these efforts. And she says, quote, "With each passing day, Nicaragua travels further down a familiar path." Haley told in a meeting of the UN Security Council on the deteriorating environment of the Central American country, quote, "It is a path that Syria has taken. It is a path that Venezuela has taken. The nerve of someone like her to put that out there as if Venezuela and Syria are not actively under attack by the U.S. government." The warning took place during the first Security Council meeting called by Ambassador Haley, the current council president, of course, to address the claims that Nicaragua's government has participated in violent acts of repression towards students and opposition groups that have led to over 300 deaths since mid-April. Haley said the Security Council could not remain a passive observer, which they're clearly already not, as Nicaragua descended into chaos because we know that's where the path leads. She said Nicaragua's President Daniel Ortega and Venezuela's President Nicolas Maduro, quote, "are cut from the same corrupt cloth, and they're both dictators who live in fear of their own people." I mean, just how many times we need to show how verifiably wrong these things are and how they're actually democratically elected more so than this very country, backed up by over 30 international observers during the last election in Venezuela. Directly contradicting the very information we're seeing that they put out. Both of these countries and their rhetoric and ignoring the very clear U.S. efforts on the ground, as we've shown their tried and true effort of carrying out, fomenting unrest on the ground and carrying out these violent protests that caused them to react. And then coming in behind them and saying, oh, how dare you attack these people that were attacking everyone? How dare you? And of course, as if we need to point out anymore, if you've hopefully seen my past shows demonstrating the very clear evidence that these are all blatant lies, there was a great show by Lee Camp they just put out on Redacted Tonight called Yet Another U.S.-Backed Coup Outed with Dan Kovalik, I believe is how you pronounce his last name. This gentleman he's a labor and human rights lawyer working on the ground in Nicaragua who is currently speaking out about the reality on the ground. And very clearly talks about the fact that these groups, basically all of the information you're hearing from the government is in fact not true. And these groups were violent protesters that ran in and caused these problems that are backed by foreign powers, by the West, to cause the very problem that they're having so they could rush in and claim that they're there to save the people. Just like we're seeing in Iran, just like we're seeing in Syria, the lame, overused tribes that they continue to push forward to justify their aggressive imperialist actions. This is nothing new. We don't need Lee Camp or anyone else to tell us this. We should be seeing this by now. The reality of U.S. foreign policy is shockingly clear. And guess what? The rest of the world is beginning to take notice. As Nikki Haley stomps her feet and grandstands in front of the United Nations, not knowing that they don't even need everyone else to go along to make things happen because they control them, just like we've seen with Israel. This stuff shouldn't be shocking to you guys, but I hope you're beginning to recognize the reality of this situation. Now, moving on to the next story, and this is one that I really wasn't going to get into, but I decided to touch on it because I've had a lot of people reach out about this story. This one coming from Zero Hedge, entitled "Twitter Permanently Bans Alex Jones, InfoWars." Now, this is a very important story to understand. I will direct anyone that needs to wants to understand more about the problem, reaction, solution nature of the drive to try to regulate social media. My interview with James Corbett, I'll make sure and have that in the show notes. But that's what this is. We have to understand, I do not support anyone being censored, not even the mainstream media, as much as they lie and propagandize. Everyone, there's no limits to free speech. There is no hate speech. There's no limits to free speech. You don't like something, look away. You don't like something that you think New York Times is lying or CNN is lying, stop watching them. The markets will take care of themselves. So Alex Jones being censored and taken off Twitter is a bad thing, and I'm not okay with it. However, the answer is not having the very people doing that swing in and regulate the very institutions we're talking about. Excuse me, institutions, the very platforms we're talking about. Very important to understand that. Now, this story, there's a lot to this. And the statement made by Twitter came. It says, "Today, we permanently suspend Real Alex Jones and InfoWars at InfoWars from Twitter and Periscope. We took this action based on the new reports of tweets and videos posted yesterday that violate our abuse behavior policy. In addition to the account's previous violations," the company posted on its safety account. Of course, actually leaving other accounts that are in fact used by InfoWars. So not a complete ban, as much as that's being put out like that, but at Alex Jones and at InfoWars are completely banned. And I'm not okay with that. Censoring of any kind like this is not okay, especially understanding that Twitter is in fact a monopoly and is in fact beholden to the constitutional rights of Americans. But that does not mean it should be regulated by the government. We should just simply stop using it if they're going to continue to take actions like this. That's the important reality. Now, Alex Jones, in my opinion, is part of this entire ploy, whether he realizes it or not. I should admit very clearly that I don't know for sure whether or not Alex Jones is controlled opposition or whatever. He could just be a tool like being used like many other people. The reality, though, is he is in fact being used because, of course, they just accidentally left his app after getting rid of everything else, which they very easily could have taken care of, which is funneling all the traffic to his website, which he says himself on videos you will see in that article, that he is now making more money than ever. Do you think that's an accident? I don't. But the reality here is that this story is important because he is being censored. And the reality is that it's not just about left or right, which is how they're trying to make this. It's about anti-establishment voices. And this is a stepping stone to either get us to call for this regulation or to take part in the two-party paradigm. And a perfect example of this, which many of you have already seen, is a tweet that was put out by Peter Fonda a while ago, which literally says, "We should rip Barron Trump from his mother's arms and put him in a cage with pedophiles and see if mother will stand up against the giant asshole she is married to. 90 million people in the streets on the same weekend in this country." And the F word. People get censored on Twitter just for saying the F word, of course. But this is a man literally calling for the kidnapping of a child and putting in a cage with pedophiles. And of course, he came back and said, "I apologize," and make note of all of the retweets and likes at the bottom. But guess what? His account with the blue check was not affected one bit. Was not taken down. This tweet was not censored. This is continuing. And his account's in perfect standing. However, Alex Jones can go in and yell at a politician and ambush journalism with one somebody from CNN, calling him rat eyes and whatever else that happened. And that's enough to get him censored? That is ridiculous. But understand, it's not about conservatives. It is about anti-establishment. The two-party paradigm is the way that they get you. We have to begin to see this. And this is important for that very reason. Now, the real point here is that they want to regulate these platforms. That's what they want. It gives these very same people even more control. And this is only the beginning. So it's important that we recognize the real ploy here. And as Glenn Greenwald points out, in regard to WikiLeaks, in this whole thing, on these very platforms, he says, "We went in record time from the internet being one of the most important human innovations in decades because it would be free, to tech executives having to justify to authoritarian politicians like Tom Cotton why they haven't banned WikiLeaks in light of CIA decrees." And I have that video here for you to take a peek at. So take a look.
"To the actions you've taken about the 2016 election, both of your platforms, and specifically one action you haven't taken, you have removed several accounts as a result of your own investigations, I think some of this committee's work, and I commend your companies for that. One set of accounts that remain on your platforms are WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, when he was the director of the CIA, characterized WikiLeaks as a non-state hostile intelligence service. This committee has agreed with that assessment now for a couple years in a row, yet both WikiLeaks, which propagated some of the leaked emails in the 2016 election from the Democrats, remain active on both Facebook and Twitter, as does Julian Assange. Ms. Sandberg, could you explain why Facebook continues to allow their accounts to be active?
I'm not going to defend WikiLeaks, and I'm not going to defend the actions of any page or actor on our platform. WikiLeaks has been public information. It's available broadly on other media, and as such, it doesn't violate our terms of service, and it remains up on our site.
And Mr. Dorsey?
So we also have not found any violation of our terms of service, but you know, we are open, as always, to any law enforcement insight that would indicate a violation of our terms.
Thank you. My time has nearly expired. Again, I want to commend your companies for making you available and both of you for appearing. I would urge both your companies or any company like yours to consider whether or not they want to be partners in the fight against our adversaries in places like Beijing and Moscow and Pyongyang and Tehran, as opposed to even-handed or neutral arbiters.
Of course, you hear Jack say, you know, but we're open to whatever you have to say. That's the real thing to take away there. And as well as Mr. Cotton openly basically threatening them, saying that, you know, why is WikiLeaks still there? Why is that still part of this? Because we've said they're a problem. And then very clearly at the end saying, ask yourself whether you want to be a part of that or a part of them. Like, this is, it's alarming. It's alarming to see someone like that say something like that, especially about somebody like WikiLeaks, regardless of what you feel about that outlet. And as many pointed out, this is partially a distraction, but this is a very real thing. This is a very real thing, and they are trying to create this problem so we react, so they already bring in their solution that they're prepared, which is either regulation or further censorship. And we have to be aware of this. We have to realize how this is taking place. And that's very important to see, that this is what they're leading towards. And that's to shut out people like us. And if they regulate these platforms, not only does it enshrine them as the new telephones forever, but they will, the very same people they're speaking will have further control, which just has a government stamp to the censorship they're already carrying out. Very important to recognize that. Moving on to the next article. This one coming from The Conversation, and an important one to understand, and this one really stands out to me about the way that we're being misled, the way that they're manipulating any number of things, whether we're talking about numbers for jobs or unemployment or bombings overseas or civilian deaths or anything we get from the bought and paid for government. They're manipulating numbers that we see. This one entitled, Why There's So Much Inconsistency in School Shooting Data. I found this to be a very important article. For a few reasons. As we know that these shootings, whether real, staged, false flags, hoaxes, or otherwise, are being used to progress political agendas. That's an absolute fact. As they can't help but speak out about their how we need to do this and do that and send and you know oh, and take away the Second Amendment the moment these things come out, using the death of these children to progress their political agendas and their careers, by the way. But it turns out the numbers they're pushing forward with these school shootings are, in fact, not true. So in April, the U.S. Department of Education released a report on the 2015-2016 school year stating that, quote, nearly 240 schools, which is about 0.2% of all schools, reported at least one incident involving a school-related shooting. However, the nonprofit Every Town for a Gun Safety database lists that only 29 schools had a shooting for the same period. And of course, when National Public Radio investigated the inconsistency, they found that 161 of the Department of Education's 240 schools, the shootings, either did not occur or could not be confirmed by the school districts that were supposed to be involved. Similarly, the American Civil Liberties Union contacted each school that allegedly had a shooting and found that 138 of the reported shootings were errors. That's a very important thing to understand. Here's the graphic for you to take a peek at. U.S. Department of Education, 240. Every town, 29. They got 20. You got 11. Quite different than 240. So we ask ourselves, the article goes in to explain why this is. And it turns out, of course, that there's any number of things they use to manipulate these numbers. When they have, somebody has a toy gun, or somebody has simply a gun on campus, or any number of many things that are important to some degree, but not in fact school shootings as it's being represented. Why do you think that is? There's a political agenda at play here. And this is an important aspect in regard to the propaganda that we talk about, whether these things in general are being staged. When we ask ourselves if they're willing to lie to us about the number of shootings that are even happening, are they willing to lie about an event? Are they willing to create an event to carry out their agenda? I would say yes, but that's for you to think about. But the reality here is that they lie to us about so many things. Whether, like I said, about jobs, unemployment, anything that suits their narrative, they will lie to us. Of course, national security. Always, which justifies everything. Even faking newscasts, as the Smith-Mundt Modernization Act will allow, legalize propaganda for national security. Whatever they deem that is, the broad sweeping brush of just whatever they deem is national security interests. Invading foreign countries in South America is a national security interest. Pretending and faking false flags, or creating or carrying out false flags in foreign governments, Syria is national security interests. We have to realize this, that they are... their jobs are to lie to you, as many don't want to realize. These people in positions of power today are not the right people. We've been lied to. We've been manipulated. And we need to begin to recognize that in the larger scheme, and in particular, as always, in what's about to take place in Syria. Very important to take that away. So make sure you check out the independent sources in the show notes below, and make sure you stay tuned for TLAV Research and Review that'll be happening in just a few minutes on this very channel as we continue the discussion about this and many other topics. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.